Hey everyone, today we've got Dr. Mark McClellan here, president of Macro Wealth Management, author of best-selling book, Your Retirement Smile. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richie. True pleasure to be here and also be your first interview in on premises.
Yes, absolutely. It's great that you're coming to Charleston. It always attracts the best people
there
who have
go.
Good taste in vacations.
Love this place.
So if people haven't seen the first episode, why don't you tell us a little bit about Macro Wealth Management?
Sure. I'm kind of in a unique position where I'm a practicing orthodontist as well as a financial advisor. And never in a million years did I expect to become a financial advisor, but...
Yeah, that's an interesting second career, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. And I was just fortunate to have a financial advisor back in the 90s who was presented to me. I was referred into him to help me and my wife with our services, and his services, and he helped me so much that we made it through the dot-com crash of 2000-2001, and like, hey, Tim, you know, this information, it works so well. I go, we need to get this information to the dental profession and orthodontic profession. And so.
So it started because they helped you through the dot-com crash. So
yes.
You knew it worked through a crash.
Exactly. And so it's one of these things that when plans can work under all circumstances or the worst case scenario, you know, it's going to be a good plan. And so I said, hey, you know, my buddies were getting kind of beat up in the market at that time. And I said, you know, we need to get your information to the dental world. And would you mind if we partnered up and became partners together to start our own company? In 2004, we started Macro Wealth Management. And so it's a very unique situation to be in because the trust factor in financial services is of utmost importance.
Absolutely.
And it's nice knowing I'm in the trenches with my colleagues each and every day, and I still practice. I still love the practice. But at the same time, I can help them in a different space because in orthodontic programs or dental programs, for that matter, or medical school programs, we're never trained on this type of information. And there is so much misinformation out there that I felt it's important to get a different message out because it's a very non-traditional message, which we'll talk about here in a moment.
And you're practicing what you preach because you have a practice, you're using this system. It got you through the dot-com. Obviously, it got you through 2008 as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've been through many different ups and downs in the market, and each and every time it's performed as presented. And that's very reassuring from a peace of mind standpoint. People want to know that, hey, if you know the proverbial, you know what hits the fan, that they're going to be okay. And when 2008 hit, we didn't have any of our clients calling us worried about the market because they know if you position it right, you're going to be just fine during those situations.
Oh, so you didn't just have a flurry of calls like a bunch of brokers probably had.
No, that's funny you say that. I mean, that's funny. My partner, Tim, he's in Peoria. He's a broker next door to him, and his phone is ringing off the hook, and he's all freaking out. He's like, you're getting bombarded with calls, and Tim's like, no, I'm not getting any calls, really.
Oh, that must have felt really good.
It feels good.
So when we first spoke early in the show, it was right in the middle of COVID.
Yeah.
And I was just watching it, and you made some pretty great predictions that I think are legit. So why don't you just bring us through what has happened in the economy kind of at the start of COVID, through COVID, and kind of up till now, what's been going on?
Yeah, well, needless to say, it was a wild world there a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was another market crash at that time, one of the biggest market crashes in March of that year. And
yeah,
it was a very disturbing year. I mean, and people really didn't know what to do. And there was a lot of cash infusion into the system that came in to help sustain these practices that we all practice in, and small businesses, if that matter. And that certainly helped sort of bridge people to get through that whole pandemic issue.
Did you find a lot of orthodontic practices needed that cash infusion during that time?
Yeah, almost all of them.
That's interesting.
There were some that didn't take any, but the vast majority did. And
yeah.
It was appropriate.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's one of those things that your most valuable piece of your practice, for the most part, is your team, and you want to make sure that all your team members stay on board. But, you know, a lot of people left, and to this day, I mean, when the government keeps giving people money, there's less inclination to want to work. And so now I think trying to get some of these people back to work is challenging. I know.
Even orthodontic practices.
Yeah.
I know my clients are, because a lot of people are asking us to help them with recruiting, which we never used to get asked that, you know, because
yeah.
We help promote your business. But
yeah.
Hey, can you help us get more people on the team? It's amazing.
No, it's really true. And it just, and we get it all the time as well. People are really struggling trying to find qualified, good people that want to work and can show up to work and walk it through. So and that was a very, very tough time. But now we've come through it. But now the problem lies, now all this money has been put out into the market, which has created other, probably unintended consequences, hence the big word inflation that we're
yes.
all you know, dealing with today.
So let's talk a little bit about that. So right now we're in an inflationary environment. What do you think about it? How is it going to get a lot worse? What is the kind of...
Yeah. So today's world is about 8.5%-ish. I think that's artificial. I think it's certainly much higher than that. Mm-hmm. If they were to base inflation today on what they did it the same way they did the CPI back in the 80s when I was a teenager, it would be in the high teens right now.
And they literally change how they measure
inflation? Yeah, they change how they... So there's a basket of goods that the government uses to measure their CPI.
Yes.
And those change all the time because, see, the government, they must keep inflation low, artificially low, because if they don't keep inflation low, then all the social programs, so security gets adjusted for inflation and the Medicare and all the other governmental programs, they'll go bankrupt or insolvent quicker.
I've never heard this. This is very interesting.
So,
very powerful incentive for them to keep it low.
Yeah, they have to, and that's why it's artificially low. It's a well-known fact for most economists who do a deep dive into it. I mean, they don't even put, you know, food and energy in these types of things. And so
it's
very, very problematic.
So you're saying the metric is not really showing what's actually happening to a regular person
on
the street.
No, it does not. No. And the interesting thing about inflation is that each and every person, you and me, we all have a different inflation metric for ourselves. You know, sometimes you send kids to private school, sometimes you don't send them to private school.
Yeah.
Sometimes you drive a fancy car or SUV that uses up a lot of gas, and some people drive the electric car. So it's not even the inflation number that's matter, because we all have a different personal inflation rate really impacts your overarching wealth management of your personal life.
Yeah, I mean, I have a big SUV, ton of gas, but it's paid for, so it's kind of working out.
A little bit, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So there you go.
That definitely helps.
So, will the metric kind of start becoming more accurate? It'll stay inaccurate? It'll always be lower than the actual is?
It will always probably be lower than it actually is, and it has to be. But the problem now is that the government or the Fed really has no way out now. And so because they can only raise interest rates, and the more they raise interest rates, the government can't pay their bills, and so they go down quicker.
Yes.
Or they pump more money into the system, which is, you know, what created the problem in the first place. There's no out for the Fed. You know, years ago, inflation back in the 80s when Paul Volcker was the Fed chairman, he had the latitude to sort of raise interest rates, you know, upward to 15-20%, which a lot of the young people who are watching this can't even fathom, you know, I remember when my dad came home, his mortgage was a 12% rate, he refinanced for 9%. He was so happy, single-digit mortgage, you know.
Because it's hard to imagine,
right?
9%.
You know, 9% mortgages, but Volcker was able to raise interest rates up to, you know, in the teens, and not bankrupt the whole country. Well, we can't do that anymore.
Why was that? Because there's less social programs.
Because we had almost debt. You know, our debt was less than our GDP. We're like 130% GDP over the debt is like
130
in that neighborhood.
So
the higher those, they can't meet their debt obligations.
Sure.
So the Fed's in trouble. And they know it, but it's in it. The problem is the consumer and the people of the country are going to be, you know, it's going to be a long slog. And that's why people are talking about stagflation, right?
So why don't you talk about what stagflation is?
Do you think
it's likely? What kind of...
Last quarter, you know, the GDP was negative, and, you know, two negative quarters means there's a recession. And so when there's no growth or zero growth with high inflation, that's considered stagflation. And so it doesn't really feel, at least the people that I read about say that we're going to be in this for a while.
So we're not officially in stagflation, but
we're on the starting point of it for the most part.
Okay.
And people forget, you know, first decade of this century, the stock market did essentially zero for 10 years. That wasn't stagflation because it was not high inflation.
Gotcha.
But now, if you run a similar scenario with the economy today and the stock market, and it does a similar thing as it did in the first 10 years of the century, and then you layer on inflation, a high inflationary environment, it's very problematic where to put your money, because it's very difficult to sort of make money. Like, for example, the bond market in the world today, there's not a single bond in the entire planet that's giving you a net positive rate of return.
There isn't?
Not one.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I never heard that.
Net, because if you back out the inflation on top of it, it's negative.
Oh, so, very interesting.
So yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic that it's going to be challenging. That, unfortunately, so much money has been pumped in the system in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. not just the COVID, but 10 years, all this quantitative
easing. I remember QE.
All the QE, all Obama, all the stuff is just pumping it in there. And so you just pump all this money, the market goes up and everything's going up. Everybody's a genius.
Yes.
It's sort of like before the .com, you could throw a dart or at the stock market, whatever stock it landed on, you could make money. It was so easy.
I mean, when you look at the S&P curve, how rapidly it went up, and this was during COVID, it was suspicious. I always thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% suspicious. But, when people get more money, they're usually sort of engage it somewhere.
Absolutely.
And it went in the market, which is actually good for the economy in some respects.
The spending.
But then at the same time, it has repercussions that we're starting to feel now. And so inflation is hurting. Inflation hurts the middle class and the lower middle class and the lower class much more than the upper class. And so the difference between inflation and recession, though, is that inflation affects 100% of our country, whereas recessions, typically happens in a recession, companies cut jobs and unemployment goes up.
Yes.
So that, that's only maybe, 2, 3, or 4, or 5%. And so recessions affect, certain companies more than others, but inflation affects everybody.
So you're just talking about unemployment going up, and unemployment has been so strange.
Mm-hmm.
The metric doesn't seem accurate to me just being out in the street, since there's help wanted signs virtually everywhere.
Yeah.
Cause from COVID or whatever is going on.
Yeah.
How, so you're having these two storms come together with the unemployment, inflation, and people maybe not wanting to work, a great resignation, whatever. What is that going to look like?
That's a question that's very difficult to answer.
Yeah.
Because it's, you can't make people go to work unless there's a lot of, there's in life, there's pain and pleasure, right? Until the pain gets bad enough, you say, well, I got to do something to.
Well, is that I've read somewhere that's part of the Fed's plan. They're raising interest rates to kind of increase that pain, to force people back into work.
Yes. Yeah, that's sort of their plan. Get more, because there are a lot of people when they do the recording of unemployment, there's people who are not looking for work, but they're unemployed. So
that's how the figure kind of seems artificial. Like,
yes.
They stopped looking.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. So if all of a sudden everyone's looking,
then
it's going to skyrocket.
It's going to go up.
Is.
Because you're right. It's rare that I talk to we have clients all over the country, over 30 states, and it's one of these things that it's rare that we don't find everyone looking for somebody to work.
Absolutely.
And as you said, you drive by, all these fast food places, everywhere you go, help wanted, help wanted. So there's definitely wiggle room in there for, further employment.
We're looking for a graphic designer to help us right now, and I was talking to a professor of a great school down the road, and he was telling me a lot of these kids are getting... They're getting offers that are way higher than he ever got or mm-hmm. thought was even possible right out of school. So they have a false perception of what's really going on. So it's really tough to get someone.
Yeah, and so that's a whole other problem which everybody's facing as well, is that there's huge wage inflation. Mm-hmm. And there's people leaving my practice to go to other practice, and people are bouncing around looking for higher wages, which is fine. But the problem is that everything has to go up in order to, compensate the owner, the business owner,
absolutely.
To be profitable and do what they need to do and invest in business and infrastructure.
We haven't raised our hourly rate in a decade, and it's time.
You guys have to. Worth It Honest have to, but they're not. And
that's interesting. They're not.
No, it's being very it's very level from what I hear, or going down a little bit.
Yes.
Because there's other competitions from, the do-it-yourself people out there,
absolutely.
And all these other pressures that are trying to keep these prices low.
So it's just cutting right into the profit margin practice right now.
Yeah, but the problem is when people get higher wages and inflation's high, they're still net. They're not advancing themselves. You see, and now we have a problem because now a business owner has to pay more, but they're not making more.
Yeah, but the employee doesn't feel wealthier.
Exactly, and so the employee, who says, "Hey, I can't even afford to drive to work because I, drive an hour to go to work,"
mm-hmm.
well. Because gas prices are crushing them. And so now that's a snowball. There's a snowball effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so let's try to tie it back into the practice. And we're in a very interesting environment with a ton of variables.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an orthodontic practice and mm-hmm. you feel like a recession is either here or definitely on the way, what kind of things should we be doing to prepare?
Yeah, like in anything, in any business model, efficiency is where it's all at. And mm-hmm. so those people have the good systems in place, from front desk, back desk, managing supplies and inventory, and then marketing. You know, having folks like yourself sort of getting out there and saying, how do we drive more people to my practice? Because you can't just hunker down and just sort of cut that line. You have to also grow. Yes. And it's very difficult to grow if you don't have some of the tools. And, you know, I can say one of my biggest regrets in my dental career or orthodontic career is not engaging people like yourself or other practice management consultants earlier to help us through these times, because, once again, we're not taught about, you know, personal finance. We're also not taught how to run a business or market a business. And if you, in order to get through these rough times, you really need to have good business acumen, I mean, to get through it, because straightening the teeth becomes the easy part of the job, but managing the business is the hard part of the job. And that, you know, then obviously as well with the DSOs and EOSOs coming on board, you know, that's, you're seeing, I've seen a lot of movement towards that in our industry because, you know, they're not wanting having to deal with it. And
now that's funny that you say that, because I have a few clients being approached by either groups or DSOs.
Yeah.
And they're people that I would never, in a million years, thought they'd even consider. But they're considering it for that very reason. It feels like it'd be less of a burden. There's no human resources to worry about.
Yeah.
They might have to take a pay cut now, but their exit might be a little better or feel a little bit less risky. And that's, are you seeing that as a trend in general?
Very much so. Very much so. And we have modeling scenarios, software programs where we put on the table and say, all right, let's sell to an OSO or let's, you know, keep as is, and or maybe do just a traditional sale to an associate or get a partner.
Yeah.
And you can scenario.
Model it,
you can model it out.
And,
because then that shows out, because the most important thing of that decision is like, how's that gonna sustain me in my rest of my working years as well as in retirement from an income standpoint.
Oh, absolutely. So if someone is thinking about this and not sure where to go, they could kind of work with you. You could help them see the data behind it.
Yeah, it's been a big, big piece of our puzzle since COVID, because a lot of people in COVID didn't want to deal with it anymore. Like this, you know, the PPE loans and the EIDL loans, all these things like, these are headaches I don't want to deal with anymore. I just want to offload it. And so there was a lot of energy in that space at that time. And it's continued.
It's happening to us. We've had a couple people who wanted to buy our company. I was like, no, we're not.
Yeah.
But I'm such a diehard entrepreneur. I don't know if it's just because I am that way that I wouldn't consider it yet.
Yeah, it's the hardest decision for people like yourself who's an entrepreneur, because it's people like their autonomy, like, you know, controlling their own destiny. And I get it. Same way, for sure.
Yeah, so if you're one of those orthodontists you would never sell, you have all the stuff in the economy to fight against. You have OSOs, large corporations.
Yeah.
You have direct-to-consumer.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressures. I mean, for example, I did sell my practice just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
To those groups.
Oh, fascinating.
For similar, well, it wasn't during COVID, it was before COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a very good decision for me. But, you know, everybody has to make their own personal decision on, you know, which model they want to continue running for the rest of their career. I mean, fortunately, orthodontics is a blessed profession. And we were talking earlier today, like, I'm always very blessed. You know, people like yourself or people in the sales side, they like working with orthodontists because it's a fun industry.
Absolutely.
And what we do for people is amazing.
Absolutely. So you would think your advice would be attack efficiency and get more eyeballs, making sure they're aware of you to get more traffic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hunkering down on the systems and just high level focus. You know, you just zoom in there.
I remember one of the reasons we even considered working in the orthodontic space was because of the website quality that I saw. Because, you know, I remember being green. I'd never met or talked to an orthodontist in my life. So all I could do was just Google.
Yeah.
And I just remember practice after practice after practice just had a website that I knew just because of my experience was not up to par at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wonder how many doctors are in that situation right now. And because it's not just a website. If the website's in that condition, then it means they haven't really taken marketing super seriously in other ways. Maybe not.
Well, I think a big piece of that puzzle is that we're kind of wired like, you know, you get it and you set it and you don't pay much attention to it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, then it's just, you look at your website 3 years later, like it's kind of the same website, maybe not enhanced all that much. You need to have people sort of, and of course the technologies, you know, all this Google stuff, AdWords and Facebook. I can't keep up. That's why your professionals help you do it, because like I'm terrible at that stuff. But it's one of those things that if you don't have somebody sort of hand holding you, getting you through those times, you will sort of be left behind.
And, I think that's true. I mean, I meet with about half of our clients every week.
Yeah, that's huge.
You can see the changes. We look at the data, and I was just telling clients we have to start looking at TikTok because costs are going up. You're in a very competitive market. We have to try something different.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, a very innovative doctor's like, sure, let's try it because they know they need to do these little experiments because we're trying to squeeze as many leads for the money as possible.
Yeah.
And it's things like this, decisions like that. Decisions
no
like
question
doing
about
more
it.
Video in the practice, like really getting building rapport with your audience. It's a tough game out there.
It's a tough game, but and that's why it's you need help. You can't be a one man show doing. I don't know how people think they can do it all by themselves. Whether it's you know marketing, personal finance. In recessions in these times, you have to focus in on what you're really good at because. And let other people help you along the way because it gets overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, speaking of overwhelming, we also have a war going on.
Yeah.
What effect do you think that has at all, if any, on the practice right now?
I think the effect the war will have on the practice is that Ukraine is, I think, the fourth largest exporter of grain in the world.
Which is a huge surprise to me when I learned that, because I never thought they were on the map for something like that.
Exactly.
So I just think of waving fields of grain in the U.S. We must have an unlimited amount, right?
No, right, exactly. And these things get shipped in Africa, a high percentage of all their imports are from Ukraine for their food.
Wow.
So I think, and Russia is also a big grain producer as well as an oil producer. And so these things will affect our prices in the future, our food prices and our gas prices.
In the United States.
Now, you know, contrary to what the president has said that, you know, Putin's caused this thing, there was inflation before Putin's war. It may have helped enhance a little bit, but no. The inflation was there beforehand. But the problem is in the orthodontic space, Ukraine and others, is that, you know, we're competing. Orthodontics is discretionary income. People pay, families pay, or their patients pay, adults pay. It's essentially discretionary income. But now our competitor is not necessarily the guy down the street or Smile Direct Club or whoever these other competitors may be. Our competitors now become food and gas.
Because they're
looking to, you know, pay $100 a month, $150 a month for orthodontics.
Yes.
You know, for, you know, you create a financial structure for their braces.
Sure.
But heck, if gas costs $50 more, you know, than they were paying before, or $75 more a tank, that's going to impact, you know, your ability to pay for orthodontics or food. You know, chicken prices up 30% and all these other staples, bacon, it's going crazy. I mean, it's just those things have a more macro effect on what we do.
So in that environment, is it going to force practices to go into price wars?
Good question. I do think there's downward pressure on our fees. Unnecessarily. I think, you know, the services we provide as orthodontists for our clientele are some of the best bargains known to mankind. So life, I tell my parents on this, the best investment you could ever make for your child.
Oh, absolutely.
And unfortunately, I don't think the fees are where they should be. They should be much higher.
I agree. I was speaking to Laura Kapik Martin. She's a consultant, and we do our 90-day transformation package with her, and she teaches TCs how to explain the value of orthodontics. And when you hear her talk, she's so passionate about it, like you really are bought and sold because I get it now.
Yeah.
And if you don't bring that across in a conversation to someone who doesn't know anything about it, it will appear completely discretionary.
Totally. Exactly.
So, that's interesting. There's definitely an argument to raise prices though and be just, I'm the best, this is the price it should be, and kind of take it or leave it, right?
Yeah, so that's where the service comes in, right? You know, if you're going to charge higher fees, you better deliver on all your promises from a service standpoint. You know, run on time. Get your patients in and out, get them completed. Emergencies.
This is why you should get your efficiencies as high as possible.
Because you become more profitable and you can charge higher fees.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. All right. what if a doctor is planning on retiring like 1, 2, 3 years from now, and we do end up going to a bad recession? Is that still, should they do that? Should they kind of wait a little longer? Should they retire early? What are the moves you think someone should make if they're in that situation?
Yeah, so we have something called the proverbial red zone. The red zone is when you're between 5 and 15 years of retirement. You know, how do you allocate your resources to make the plan to say, hey, listen, I'm going to turn it off, I'm going to retire, or I'm going to keep working? Because when we're young, we have a little more time on our sides. We're able to make mistakes and sort of recover, and we're making more money. Orthodontics make a very nice income, and so you can sort of overcome things that occur in the economy. But when you sort of get later down the road, when you're 50, 55, 60, or in some cases even 45, but when I say 50 plus, you really need to make sure that your resources or your assets are allocated or positioned in such a way so that if you're ready to call it a day, you're saying, all right, I've got this, this, and this to allow me to have the income that I want. That's why we wrote our book, because in our there's not been a single client we met for the first time in the traditional world, the traditional planning world, that when we meet them for the first time and go through all their numbers, they won't take between a 40 and 60% pay cut in retirement.
Yeah, and so, your book is all about not taking a pay cut.
No pay cut. Retirement. So we want 100% income replacement in retirement with some built-in guarantees so that if you have a little offset in there, no matter what happens, you're just still going to be okay. So that's sort of what we call the gold standard of a financial plan is no pay cut in retirement.
Absolutely.
But the only way to do that is to sort of position different assets in different places so that, you know, if the stock market goes down, you've got maybe real estate going on over here, or maybe cryptocurrency is going on over here, or you've got, you know, bonds, or, you know, there's no perfect magic financial product out there to invest in. So it's how you put them all together in a puzzle to create the maximum income. And when you do that, your risk will always go down. The concept of, you know, in order to get a high rate of return, you have to take high risk. No, it's not true. You can actually get a higher rate of return with less risk by the management of all the different assets put together.
Why don't we talk about, because I was just watching our first episode, we'll put a model on the screen while we're talking. Just go through a high overview of the model you guys talk about, because it was a great reminder when I watched. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to start working on this immediately. It's so holistic.
It is a holistic model. There's no financial decision anybody can make that does not fall somewhere in that model. And there's five pieces of the model. We call it the game board. And every financial decision that you are I can make will fall somewhere within that game board. Yet nobody in the traditional world of personal finance have a game board. So they're trying to play the game of finance without it's like playing Monopoly without a game board. It's like
impossible. You're talking about the junk drawer earlier. They just have all these financial products.
It's exactly right. So we call it the financial junk drawer. Everybody has a kitchen junk drawer. We call it the financial junk drawer. And when we meet people, it's all not coordinated, not integrated. It's just a mess. And so when you just clean up normally what they have, it becomes more efficient and you get greater output. It's like when you take your car to the shop, you know, you get the same car back, but they may change the plugs, new air filter, new oil, whatever. So you have better horsepower, better outputs. Your car works better. Same thing with finance. You just take your same stuff and then you enhance it. And then if you layer more money on top of it, of course it gets better. I mean, any advisor can say, if you give me more money, I can maybe make you more money. We think it's more professional. Give us the same money and we'll make you more money.
Absolutely.
But that
if you do make more money, you're still making more money out of the money you made.
Well, that's sort of like an efficiency play that we talked about in the practice in recession, right? When times get tough, you may not be able to save as much because inflation's impacting your ability to save. And so if you can make that model work better, then you'll be much better off than if you didn't have the model. And the model has like five components. There's the protection component, which is sort of the moat around your castle, insurance products and such. And there's the savings component where we house our liquid money and our retirement plans and money markets. And then there's the growth component. That's where the risk money goes, where you have bonds and equities and mutual funds, ETFs, cryptocurrencies, gold, silver, real estate businesses. And then the other two pieces of the puzzle are your cash flow and your debt. And so that's how that the game board gets sort of, it's a moving, living being. So
if we're in the midst of this, say we're in the depths of the recession, you're still not just going to focus on one piece, like just protection. You're always going to be looking at this in a holistic way and moving the pieces around.
That's the key, because in the traditional world of finance, they always focus on accumulating your assets. You know, put your money here and let it go. We believe you should accelerate your assets. So you can take you know, numbers like accumulation is 3 + 3 = 6, acceleration is 3 × 3 = 9. Same inputs, more output. And But the only way to do that is to manage it on a continual basis. We always say a perfect financial plan is a series of 1 year perfect plans. So you just can't like do
You can't let it set it.
And yes. In the orthodontic world, in the dental world, in the medical world, unfortunately, there are, in our model, there's 27 different boxes. Unfortunately, most people in the healthcare space have all their money in one box, and that's essentially the 401k profit sharing cash balance plan.
Yes.
And I don't care what investment it is, anytime you have everything for the most part allocated in one place, you're susceptible to things you may not like.
Gotcha.
And so we and it's not just diversification of your equities and your bond portfolio. That's micro important.
Mm-hmm.
It's the diversification of all your assets together, and that's the important for diversification.
And it also produces multiple income streams, right? Weren't you saying that even in retirement, how many income streams do you think you should
ideally
have?
You know, wealthy people, there's research study done years ago that said wealthy people have 7 to 10 income streams
in retirement.
In retirement.
Now that's fascinating.
So they got 7 or 10 different checks coming in their mailbox, so that no matter what's happening, this may be going down, but this is doing fine. And so our objective is developing as many income streams as possible from as many resources as possible. And unfortunately, like in the, once again, in the traditional world, you have all your money in a 401k or profit sharing plan, that's one income stream.
Yes, that makes sense.
So you're limiting yourself. It's not that it's a bad thing. I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm just saying you have to be aware that there are a lot of other great opportunities out there to take advantage of.
All right, so let's say you're determined to grow very aggressively through the recession.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you would do? Obviously, one of them is to get your financial junk drawer figured out.
Yeah.
Obviously, to increase efficiency there.
Yeah, that would be first and foremost. And, making sure, too, that, even from a protection side, recession, I don't remember the book or not, but I had open heart surgery at age 45, so yeah. It's one of those things that, you want to make sure that, all your coverages or your disabilities right. So if anything happens to you, the worst time, if you get in a recession, that's a bad time to have lose your cash flow,
yeah.
And you got, a hand that's not working right, or your back goes out.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to have all the protection insurance products properly set up first and foremost.
Yes.
And then you start working on liquidity, because then you sort of build in certain amount of liquidity, whether it's 6 months of cash on the sidelines, so that, when the recession comes, which it's coming, I kind of believe we're in the recession right now.
I kind of feel that way.
I think we're in it. But the best time to, and we talked about it too, when a 0% rate of return hits opportunity, that's your greatest rate of return of all time.
I know, that's so, such a good quote.
Yeah, right?
Let's say it again. When a 0% rate of return hits opportunity, that will be your greatest rate of return.
Yeah.
And a lot of people saw that just in COVID, when you had a lot of liquidity to invest and the stock market was plummeting and we knew it would come right back, there's probably a lot of wealth created.
Huge.
Months after that.
Huge,
right?
Huge. Yeah. So people say, hey, Martin, Tim, I'm only getting 0.1% on my checking or savings mm-hmm. account or money market account. It's just abysmal. And it is. But when you're able to allocate that money at certain time frames, there's that same as when there's blood in the streets, that's when people make their most money,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And when COVID hit and it took like a 30% drop in a week, that's a lot of our clients called up, hey, I've got, this X amount of dollars sitting on the sideline. Should I allocate it now to the stock market? And we said, absolutely. That's what it's there for.
Yeah.
And wow. I mean, those portfolios did really, really well.
That's what it's there for.
That's what it's there for.
Really,
so that's
important.
That's the whole 0% meaning opportunity,
yes,
whether it's a real estate investment. A lot of times people, say, oh, I want to do real estate and we love real estate. But in order to real estate, you have to have some capital
mm-hmm.
to put into the real estate project.
Yes.
And when you're all sort of tied up in a retirement plan or you're tied up in stocks and bonds, well, you don't necessarily want to sell your stocks and bonds in the down market to get the money to go into real estate, right?
Yes.
You want to have the capital to say, all right, let's move it here and then start working cash flows on that.
All right, so if we can get all that, if we make our financial world super efficient, we're getting the most money out mm-hmm. of the money we're putting into it.
Yeah.
So we want to increase the money to put into it. So marketing comes into play because we're just getting more patience because we're investing in marketing to mm-hmm. get our brand in front of more people, so more people schedule appointments, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we do with the 90-day practice transformation is it's myself working with Laura Catholic Martin, who's working with the TC. So we're bringing them leads.
Mm-hmm.
She's teaching them how to close more people
mm-hmm.
because they're just showing this extreme value of orthodontics to them. And then we have Eric from TX Converter. He's taking pending patients who we kind of just forgot about and turning more of those people
interesting
into starts. So we're trying to have a try, like attack it from three different angles.
I love that. I love that.
To produce more starts. So maybe if you did that and you focused on efficiency with maybe with technology, you could even get more.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is in orthodontics, it all starts with the practice, right? Yes. The practice is what drives the ability to have money to, you know, work with us. I mean, if the practice is struggling and are not running efficient, they don't have good marketing pieces out there to sort of get new bodies through the front door, you know, we're not going to be able to help you all that much. So, you know, the key is going to be, you know, really being ultra focused in on your practice.
And I've definitely noticed some of the most successful practices are doing that I've come across are doing those things, but they also just have amazing teams. Like the dynamic of their team is amazing. And that, did they teach any of this in school, or is it just
No, they didn't.
They don't, right? So you have to get a consultant to help you with this, unless you're just naturally great at it.
I know. I just think a consultant's definitely the way to go on that. Because they're so good at, you know, understanding personalities and how personalities fit. And every orthodontist who's watching this understands the personality conflicts that get, you know, created just in a normal orthodontic environment. And we're kind of small operations. We're not, you know, ginormous corporations. And so we're pretty much elbow to elbow with a lot of, you know, people. And so you have to be able to get along. And sometimes, you know, get one bad apple, that can sort of bring the whole house of cards down. So people who are, I can sort of see that from a higher level point of view, yeah, you got to get rid of that person. Mm. You know, sometimes orthodontists are non-confrontational. They won't have to deal with it. And so, I just give me my bracket, let me put it on the tooth and, you know, move forward. But sometimes you need to, you know, do what needs to be done to sort of create the teams you're talking about.
Yeah. So if someone wanted to grow a lot aggressively, would you say to attack all of these things at once and sort of just outsource them so you're not having to put all of your own energy into it? Would that be one strategy?
Well, I find, personally, I'm almost better if I can just sort of bite it off in pieces and say, I was like, okay, let's focus on, I do believe the team's like sort of the best starting point.
That makes sense.
So you go team and then you say, all right, team, how are we going to make what we do really, really good?
Yeah.
And now we're going to say, okay, now we got to figure out how we're going to get more patients. You know, we're going to do what we're doing because we're successful, but then how do we, you know, continue to make it going, especially in tough times? And so that's an engagement of a consultant, or maybe in a consultant at the front end and then a marketing person or website person, you know, in that next step.
I gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So you want to really build something that you can scale. So you're not scaling errors, right?
No, right. That's right. Because, you know, those things, errors tend to compound, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets more frustrating, and we don't want to be frustrated. Life's too short to be frustrated.
Yeah, that's so true. all right, so I was watching our last interview, and we were talking about cryptocurrency, so I wanted to at least touch on it because it's crazy right now in the crypto world.
Yeah. So crypto is something I'm very passionate about,
and
we've actually integrated it into our practice. I think we're the first group to offer cryptos for our clients, and so...
Oh, are you? That's happened since we last spoke?
Yeah, we have. So
it's awesome.
We've got a turnkey thing because they don't want to deal with all the... nuances and kind of the complexities potentially
crypto. I just got my wallet.
I
was watching a webinar and he walked me through it, so I was like, okay, I'm in it.
Yeah, exactly. So we're very bullish on it, although it's been like the worst month in the history, and it's been really bad recently for Bitcoin and all the other cryptocurrencies. But that's also sort of a measurement of not only the economy at hand, but there's also some other things that are going on with regulation and stuff in crypto, which I think should be part of the equation. And so my personal feeling on cryptocurrency in the blockchain is I think it is the future. Mm-hmm. I think the blockchain technology itself is going to be bigger than the internet. And so
Bigger than the internet. Oh, wow. And I could see it. Last time we were talking about the importance of it just in an election scenario, just because
Exactly.
Just showing immutable.
Immutable, right. You could just, exactly right. You could do the election with no, you know, worries.
Yes, you can look back on a record and see if something changed. Right?
You're right. But, it's going to be tremendous, and I think the whole financial world will be changed through the whole concept of DeFi, decentralized finance. And so I am still very, people say, well, when blood, there's blood in the streets, like we talked about before.
Yes.
Well, you know, this people are saying this is kind of the bottom. I'll never say it is the bottom, but it's taken a pretty significant crash. You know, it was up in back in November, almost 70,000, and now it's down around 20.
I was just looking at the curve. Yes, it was very.
So it's been a very, but that's sort of the nature of. Unfortunately, in crypto, this is. I've been doing it for a while. These types of swings are not uncommon, but people are new to the space, freak out. They're like, oh, totally my gosh. And so we always say that you just want to allocate a relatively small portion of your portfolio to cryptocurrencies. And the data and the research shows that if you allocate just a little bit of money, 1% to 3%, it increases your rate of return significantly, even on like a 60-40 portfolio, stock portfolio, with the same standard deviation or the same risk.
Yes.
And so therein lies the benefit of, you don't have to take more risk to get more return. And so then you're saying, well, if the risk is the same and I get a little greater rate of return, there's no reason not to do it.
Absolutely.
And so I'm a firm believer that everybody should have at least some Bitcoin or some cryptocurrency in their portfolios, and once again, that's just another income stream.
And this Bitcoin, it's really considered just the safest. Is that true?
It's the most well established.
Okay,
and it's the strongest computer network in the world right now. So because it's all the computers connected. So
it's the strongest computer network in the world.
Yeah, it's the biggest network in the world, and it's only getting bigger each and every day. And that's sort of where people are like, there's no value behind Bitcoin. Well, the value is the network.
Absolutely.
And that's why, you know, it can't really be shut down. Governments can't shut it down. All these things is because it's decentralized. And
isn't that basically what Web 2.0 is all about? It's using a bunch of computers to make a server to do things that isn't a centralized, you know, Google data warehouse.
Yeah, and Web 3, you know, same thing. They're going decentralized.
Web 3
is all decentralized. And
that's fascinating.
And I think, you know, and when you get down to it, you know, this centralized versus decentralized, you know, it pervades or creates more liberty and freedom for people because it gives them the power to own their own money.
Yes.
You know, they can't be confiscated. It can't, because you have your own asset. And so that there's I think there's a lot of value just from a freedom and liberty standpoint.
Gotcha. Mark, you're telling me you're participating in something called the Dentiverse. Why don't you just tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, very excited about the Dentiverse. It's just came out this past couple weeks.
Yeah.
And what it is the first dental-focused NFT project involving the metaverse. Now, those are a lot of words in there. Like,
metaverse. Okay.
You know, what's the metaverse? What's an NFT?
Yeah.
An NFT is a non-fungible token, so it's something that cannot be changed. It's immutable, and so they're trying to create a worldwide community of people. And these gentlemen started the project over in Europe.
Yes.
And they're offering these NFTs for dentists, and it's going to be a dental community where you can interact scientifically for research meetings. You can have humanitarian efforts. They're having the one I'm really excited about is this one, where they're having a crypto payment system. So for years, I've always looked at ways to try to for our patients to pay in crypto or have the opportunity to pay in crypto, like a credit card.
Yes.
And they've developed a crypto payment system where you can integrate that with your practice management software. And if people want to pay for their dental services or their braces with Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever it may be, they'll be able to use this.
And it's integrated. They've got it integrated with some of the practice management systems.
Yeah, within this Dentiverse.
Gotcha.
And so there's there'll be investment advice on it, things like what we're talking about today, crypto, real estate, normal investments. So it's going to be an engaging environment for all dentists around the world. And so they're going to have meetings in Europe.
Are we going to have conferences in this?
Yeah.
Right, in this environment,
they'll have conferences in there, and they'll have opportunity to, you know, for businesses to participate in the metaverse. So, they asked me to be an ambassador on the project, and it's been it's been very, very. That doesn't mean a whole lot. There's no investment on my. Other, you buy an NFT, that's about it. But it's been a number.
But you have some influence on the future.
Yeah, exactly. Because they'll have something called a DAO. A DAO is called a decentralized autonomous organization. You sort of self-govern yourself and sort of create the community that you all want it to be. And
that makes sense. That's nice.
So it's a very, very exciting project that it's getting some traction. The NFTs were available as of yesterday, actually.
Oh, so this is brand new.
Brand new.
So if you're very innovative orthodontist, practice, check it out.
Yeah, if you want to be a disruptor and you want to sort of, you know, maybe to the point of what we talked about before, what can you do? Maybe you got to look at different ways of, you know, making yourself different.
Yes.
Sometimes doing things like this, even though you may not even gauge it, and say you do a part of it, I think there's value there.
Absolutely. Anything that stops you from just looking like a commodity in the market.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So yeah, I think it's Denniverse.io is the website.
Yeah, we'll put the link in there.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you the link on that. Yeah, and it's exciting, and NFTs are going to be a thing of the future, undeniably. I think we're all going to be our own personal NFTs someday to protect our own personal data, because that's the most valuable asset in the world today's data.
Absolutely.
And so, and if you can monetize it through owning your own personal NFT, that's going to be big. And so NFTs are going to be much more part blockchain again. So that's going to be part of that blockchain discussion we had before.
Absolutely. Cool. All right, let's go to another random question.
Yes.
So I have to learn TikTok because this is my land. Because I'm in marketing, I have no choice. But it is very entertaining, I have to
admit. It's getting very, very exciting. I mean, a lot of TikTok things going on.
So I'm a 43-year-old guy. The TikToks I see are not what a kid sees. So I'm seeing stuff about finance and homesteading and cars and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. So one of the TikToks I've seen are people advocating for this type of life insurance that is treated as a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set up in a certain way, and then they pull loans from it, and somehow it's helping them in their tax situation. Can you just talk about this idea and if it's credible?
Yeah, so it's called Be Your Own Banker concept, or the family bank. There's a different couple books out there on the concept of it, and it's utilizing whole life insurance or index universal life insurance as a tool to create other assets and sort of get some tax benefits from it. If you do a deep dive on it, it's something that most people should not do.
Okay.
Whole life insurance is a very valuable asset, but whole life insurance and index universal life is a different animal in and of itself, which is another conversation. But whole life insurance is really the only guaranteed one out there other than one other one. But let's just assume that this is the main bird. So that's what you want to guarantee. So the problem in the financial services industry is that, you know, they try to always sell you stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and when things are, you know, if the investments are going bad or life insurance is bad, they say, well, how do we combine them to sell more and make them try to get the best of both worlds? But the fact of the matter is, investments are really good by themselves, and life insurance is really good by itself. Mm. But when you position it on the model we're talking about, you don't have to be your own bank and stuff to get the benefits that we're talking about of getting full income replacement.
I see.
You let the insurance do what it does.
Yes.
And yes, you can take loans from it, and that is a very valuable piece, but you should pay those loans back.
Yeah.
And you do. There are some tax-free benefits to it, yes. But the problem is that in the life insurance space, the death benefit is the most important piece of those contracts, bar none. But everybody else looks at whole life insurance and other universal life products, it's the cash value. The cash value is not the important part. And so what happens is during these family bank situations, they kind of rape the cash value, and they steal all the cash value, and it ruins the death benefit.
Which is the most important thing.
And that's the piece they miss. And that's why when you put it on the model, say, all right, because we get it all the time, like, I want to do be your own bank. I want to do this thing. Great. Tim Olson, when I first met Tim, he goes, my opinion is no better than anybody else's opinions, but if they can't prove it economically, that it's going to give you more benefits and more output, then you have to throw that out as an opinion and move on.
Sure.
And so we say, all right, fine.
We're
going to show you. We'll show you what we would present with those same dollars.
Yes.
And we're going to do the family bank or the be your own banker.
Yeah.
And we beat it every time because it can't hold up. That model can't hold up economically.
Cool.
It's a great discussion. We see it all the time on all the Facebook blogs and other places. Yeah. It's a good discussion point, and it takes a little bit more deeper dive there. But you know, I think sharing this information with a little side 3-minute podcast would be valuable for a lot of people because as I said, there's no magic product out there. You know, each have good and they're bad. And anybody says, "Oh, I would never do that," well, then you're missing something, and vice versa. And it's a matter of how they fit together.
All right, just to wrap up, if you're an orthodontic practice, you want to thrive through the recession, just overall, what should we think about doing?
Well, we've touched on a number of those points in terms of, you know, honing down, just figuring out the best way to sort of manage your practice from a system standpoint, as well as overhead standpoint, team standpoint. You know, I think you got to sit down, because I think they recognize the pains they're feeling with inflation and the economy. Say, listen, we got to do this together.
Yes.
And the Orthodontist has to say, you know, I can't do this again. We all Orthodontists know we can't do it without our team. So it's like, you know, let's make this. And I told my team back when I first became my own owner, I'm like, I want you guys to be the best compensated team on the whole North Shore of Chicago.
Yeah, awesome.
And hopefully that motivates them. Say, like, you know, because obviously if the practices are doing well and I'm doing well, then I want them to do well as well. Mm-hmm. And I think if you get everybody in that mindset, you know, from the get-go, we all know it's going to be tough, but we got to sort of move on to say, hey, how are we going to get over this hump? You know, things will pass. Absolutely. And then you move into the marketing pieces and, you know, the practice growth standpoint and do what's necessary and engage people. You know, I'm a firm believer you need to engage people. You know, Michael Jordan had many coaches. Tiger Woods has many coaches. You can't, you know, go out and do it yourself. And you need to, you know, engage other professionals.
Perfect. Well, Mark, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Learned a lot. And thanks for stopping by the studio.
Here we are in Charleston.
In Charleston, no better place to be.
It's going
to
be it's a great spot.
All right, guys, if you know someone that wants to be a guest on the show, just go to orthothrive.com. You can always reach out to me at richard@orthosalesengine.com. Keep grinding, keep thriving, and I'll see you next time.